I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
Like most of you, my only experience with pool hustling comes from the films The Color of Money and The Hustler, starring Paul Newman. My guest sports writer John Wertheim immersed himself in this subculture when he got to know a player named Danny Bacevich, known as Kid Delicious. Bacevich was a severely depressed, overweight New Jersey teenager who hated school when he discovered that he was a really, really good pool player. Before long, he had hooked up with another player, Bristol Bob, and they hustled at pool halls across the country. Wertheim writes about their exploits in his new book. It's called Running the Table, The Legend of Kid Delicious, The Last Great American Pool Hustler. It's also about the characters who inhabit pool halls and the beauty of the sport, which he says is all angles and perspective and spin. It's illusion and guile. It's subterfuge and artifice. John Wertheim joins us today on Radio Times to talk about this extraordinary player and about the world of pool and pool sharks. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. John Wertheim, nice to have you with us. Good morning.
Great to be here. Hi.
So how did you meet Kid Delicious? How did you first hear about him?
Well, the story is that I was reading, the Wall Street Journal had done a piece a few years ago about a pool tournament in Grand Central Station, and they sort of in passing, I don't remember verbatim, but they alluded to a player who was a heavyset hustler named Kid Delicious who made $200,000 hustling. And then they sort of went on, and the next paragraph was, you know, Moscoane beat Larry Platt in the semifinals. And I'm sort of thinking, yeah, I don't care who won this tournament. Tell me more about the heavyset hustler. So tracked this guy down, and I had the good fortune. A, his name was Bacevich, so it was easy to get off the internet. And B, he lived in New Jersey. I'm based in Manhattan. He lives in New Jersey, so he's an hour away. And it was just I think the first time I called, I got his voicemail, and it said, I'm away from my desk right now. So I'm thinking, at least there's a pool hustler with a sense of humor. And then I met this guy, and it was just, I hate to sort of, you know, objectify like this, but for a journalist, it was just goldmine.
Now, why is that? And I have to say, having read the book, I can see why it was a goldmine, but tell our listeners.
Well, first of all, as a sports writer, Sports Illustrated, you're used to sort of dealing with these layers of handlers and agents and so forth. So just getting a guy on the phone and, you know, having no time limit and no please fax your questions in advance was refreshing.
Yes.
But, you know, as you said, we're talking about a heavy set, wildly candid, wildly talented, you know, just boundlessly charming overweight pool hustler. If you can't make a story out of that, you've got problems.
And when you called him up, was the idea, I want to write more about you, I want to learn more about you, and was he open to that idea?
Yeah, absolutely. He had sort of, timing-wise, he had this, you know, very successful hustling career, but then I think largely because of his appearance, his hustling days had sort of passed him by, and he was making this transition. I was actually playing, I think he was, you know, the number one ranked pool player as a pro, which of course meant he was making 10% of what he made when he was hustling.
Exactly.
But no, he was happy for the publicity. I wasn't going to ruin his sort of identity or anything, and I came down and sort of told my editor I thought I might have something here, and I went and we hung out, actually not far from in Feasterville, not down the boulevard, not far from here. And he's got this great voice, which I'm
we'll hear that voice
hopefully we'll
later on in the hour.
Great storyteller, and he was doing trick shots and showing me all of his hustling moves, and it was just, my editor, I remember driving back and my editor saying, well, you think there's something there? And I says,
are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Now, do you play pool at all?
I'm like you. I tried to be candid about this. 3 years ago, my knowledge of pool was, you know, you hit the white one against the colored one.
Exactly.
So no, I didn't. And I think, you know, obviously, I think it helped and it hurt, but I did not bring a wealth of pool knowledge into this project.
And you make a point in this book of saying that the pool is a sport. I mean, don't kid yourself. This is a sport.
Oh, absolutely.
I say that because I think some people would think it's a game, it's a pastime, it's a something, but maybe don't think of pool as a sport.
Right. And, the subject of this book is probably, frankly, in excess of, you know, he doesn't look like an athlete. Let's leave it at that.
No.
But the physically, I think the dexterity and the angles and sort of a lot of the rhythms are very similar to what I would report on for someone in the NBA or someone, you know, one of these million-dollar athletes. It's really a lot of the same drill. And, you know, Kid Delicious is not jumping over hurdles or dunking basketballs, but mentally and also in just how he perceives what he does, I think absolutely he's an athlete.
You know, I have to say, as a very bad pool player and someone who didn't do so well in geometry, and he was not a good student, I mean, or he didn't do well in school, but he seemed to take to this pool table, and I would think you would need those kind of mathematical skills so that you understand how balls behave, you know, within this particular kind of square.
Absolutely. It's a very, I mean, one of the great, and I sort of came across, I realized one of the great paradoxes of the sport are these are guys who, you know, I think I wrote they forget their kid's birthday and they're lucky if they don't skip belt loops. And when they're at that table, I mean, sort of the mental organization, it's not just hitting the ball, it's thinking 8-10 shots ahead and sort of organizing this rack. You're right, and it's all sort of this Euclid, you know, it's all sort of angles and positioning.
Exactly.
And, you know, in the movies, the guys shoot and they crack the balls and they go rocketing, and it's really not like that at all. It's very methodical, and they end up hitting shots that you and I could probably make, but the whole point is the position. I mean, you and I don't get our cue ball to line up like
that.
So, you know, here's a guy, and it was this fascinating dichotomy between a guy who had, he's very candid about this, I mean, some mental health issues, and he certainly isn't alone among pool players. And yet when he's at the table, just sort of the organization was really remarkable.
Well, you interview his parents, and you spend a lot of time writing about his life before pool. He was a New Jersey kid, teenager, really struggled with depression. I would say pretty profound depression, to the point where it would put him in bed at some times. He couldn't even operate because he was a fat kid. He was teased a lot at school. I would say a loving family, but a painful childhood. Yes?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think, I think one of the things I wrote was that this is one of the few times where parents actually encourage their child to go be a pool hustler.
Because they saw how it changed his personality.
Yeah,
and
exactly. And this imbued him with happy that he wasn't acting like this, and he wasn't getting this from anywhere else in life. And if they had, you know, this nice middle class Jewish family, and if they had their way, he probably would have gone around. Yeah, exactly. He would have, he'd be carrying a bag and wearing loafers today. But they saw after years and years, he dropped out of school. There were, you know, he was sort of bullied, and they found him once in the woods crying. I mean, just one of these
painful
teenage years. And he discovers pool, and just something clicked, and his parents said, you know what? Makes you happy, go do it.
You quote him as saying that he said, it makes my head right, which I thought was a really interesting description, because I think someone who's profoundly depressed gets lost in their head and the thoughts and feelings in their head.
Yeah, one of the challenges, and I frankly didn't realize the extent of this going in, was sort of trying to write about mental illness, which is not easy when it's not a, you know, when it's not a memoir, when you're not William Styron doing it yourself.
Right.
Another paradox of this whole thing was that Poole, as he sort of tried psychotherapy and tried medication, and it didn't really work for a variety of reasons. And so the one thing that gave him pleasure, the one thing that sort of snapped him out of this funk, was playing pool. And yet you talk to mental health professionals and they'll say, well, let's see, you're staying up all night, you're
exactly.
Never sleeping in the same bed twice, you've got the highs and lows of gambling, you could scarcely conceive of an activity less conducive to optimal mental health than playing pool, and yet it's sort of what got Kid Delicious out of his funk.
And there was a pool hall, I guess, he went to rather in his neighborhood and began to hang out and learn the skills, and it was clear that this was a very skilled pool player.
Yeah, I think pretty early. One of his great hustles, actually, before he went on the road, was going here in South Jersey and in Philly, and he would buy a college sweatshirt and slather beer, or buy a piece of chocolate cake in the dining hall. Probably wouldn't buy it. He'd probably sweet-talk his way to getting it. Go to the vending machine at the pool hall and drop a $100 bill, and they'd think, who's this fat, slovenly kid who's
right, with chocolate cake all over his
front. Chocolate cake on his sweatshirt and his Villanova sweatshirt or whatever. And then you know, when the stakes got high, he'd say, hey, buddy, you want to bet a little money? Sure. And then when the stakes got high enough, he'd run the table. But, he's from Manalapan, New Jersey, down here. And Philly has sort of a rich pool culture.
Yes,
and this is one of his sort of training grounds before he went out on the road.
Tell us about the hustle. I mean, he's a hustler. And as I said, we know from movies how the hustle works. Why was he, and we will hopefully talk with him in a bit. What was attractive, do you think, about the hustle for Danny Bacevich?
Well, I think this in some ways was his revenge. He's not a physical guy. For all his years on the road, never been on a fight. And this isn't just me. I mean, I tried to speak to as many people as possible, and just dozens and dozens of people all saying he's so charming. Mm-hmm. The guy would beat me out of $10,000, and I'd still want to introduce him to my wife. I think the hustle some way was his sort of way of getting back at the world and the bullies. I think some of it he enjoyed. He's great fun. He's a great sort of charismatic guy, and I think he enjoyed the play acting, sort of the method acting of going in there.
And the idea of, for instance, on a college pool hall, the idea of pretending to be some dweeby freshman, right?
Exactly.
Coming in and acting like you don't know what you're doing, that's the setup, right?
Right. And for him, it's all the, you know, he had a road partner who's, I think, cuts a more traditional figure who is this, you know, still is this athletic.
Bristol Bob,
who is sort of what you would expect, the muscular, intense, sort of fiery hair trigger temper. And then he'd be posed next to this, you know, this heavyset kid cracking jokes with this. I mean, you got to, we'll patch him in, as they say, and you can hear the accent. But, you know, the most unlikely pool hustler. So I think he liked the competition. He liked beating guys. But I think he loved the fact that people were prejudging him, and here was this heavyset joker. He can't do anything. I'd be happy. Not only will I play you, but I'll give you this advantage. And, you know, 10 minutes later, they'd be out large sums of money.
Well, tell us about, I guess, the world of pool hustling. For one, like all subcultures, there's a whole language there, a really colorful language, not surprisingly, that goes with pool hustling.
You know how, what is it, Inuits have, you know, 18 words for snow.
Yes.
Yeah, I think pool players have about twice that many for money. But no, it was part of the appeal of this book was just an absolutely fascinating, if diminishing, subculture. And the characters I met, you know, Danny would tell me his stories, but I knew I couldn't just transcribe tape, basically. So I would call these guys in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and in Davenport, Iowa, and, you know, Olathe, Kansas. And, my cell phone would ring with some very interesting area codes, but you just can't make these figures up. They sort of had this lodestar figure, Bristol Bob and Kid Delicious did, who his job was to sort of steer them to action for a percent.
007.
007.
Right?
They called him, and he was based in Chicago and sort of claimed to know every pool hall in the country. He would not only know where to go, but in what order. If you see the bald guy, play him first, and then go to the guy with the dragon tattoo. And they would sort of do everything he told them, and, you know, darn if he wasn't right.
We're almost having a break here, but you're in a pool hall somewhere, and there's a sign that says, no gambling. Or were you
exactly.
First you think it says no gambling, then you realize it says no gambling.
Yeah, that's pool in a nutshell right there. It's all about deceit.
All about deceit and all about what playing the odds, checking the environment.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it's like a security guy walking into a bar and sort of, exactly. It's a lot more than just what goes on at that 9x7 table.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take that short break and then get back to our conversation. Our guest is John Wertheim. And he's written a new book. It's called Running the Table, and it's subtitled The Legend of Kid Delicious, The Last Great American Pool Hustler. And we hope to be talking with Kid Delicious in a couple of minutes here on Radio Times. And the book is about this extraordinary pool player, but it's also about the whole subculture of pool and hustling pool as well. If you're a pool player, we want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Planned Parenthood supports WHYY. For 90 years, Planned Parenthood has been dedicated to providing health information and services. Did you know Planned Parenthood provides over 3 million women and men with health care every year? Planned Parenthood. Our mission is prevention.
Supporting WHYY Abington Friends School, a co-ed Quaker school serving students from preschool through 12th grade. AFS is committed to developing the talents of each child with a balance of academic rigor and joy in learning. AFS is known for its arts program, athletics, and atmosphere of collaboration, helping graduates to be well-prepared and well-rounded. Open house this Saturday, October 13th at 1 p.m. To register, 215-886-4350 or abingtonfriends.net.
I'm Marty Moscowane, inviting you to be in the audience when Radio Times visits Princeton University on Wednesday, October 24th at 6 p.m. We'll tape a program looking at the state of national politics, and you'll have a chance to ask some of the questions. To reserve your seat for this exclusive WHYY member event, call 215-351-0511 or visit whyy.org. If you're not already a member, you can join today.
Support for WHYY is provided by Temple University. The T in Temple represents the work and achievements of Temple's people, and it is a mark their alumni and students, faculty, and staff wear with pride. Details at tmeansmore.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. John Wertheim has covered a range of topics for Sports Illustrated, where he's a senior writer. That includes tennis, the NBA, the business of sports, some of the social issues associated with sports. And he's got a new book. It's about a gifted, overweight, charming, bipolar pool hustler named Danny Bacevich, who calls himself Kid Delicious. And the book is called Running the Table. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So how did he get the name Kid Delicious, which is a delicious name,
a great
if there
one,
ever
huh?
was one, yes.
I think he was still about 18 or 19. He went to a pool hall in Chelsea Billiards in Manhattan to play against the hot local player. His name was Kid Vicious. And so, as you know, in stumbles this overweight guy who's kind of goofy and carrying an ugly pool stick, and he said he bet everything he had on this game to the point where, had he lost, he didn't think he'd be able to, you know, go home on toll roads. Ends up, you know, there's all this, when you play pool and bet, it's not just you're betting on the other guy, but there's all this action on the rail, they call it, with the sweaters, as they're called.
And these are the ones watching and betting?
Yeah, exactly. So it's this whole, you know, it's like bullfighting. But so they play each other. And Kid Delicious wins, and somebody sort of whistles and says, you know, Kid Vicious just got hustled by Kid Delicious. And Danny thought it was, you know, still another crack at his weight, and it probably was. But then he sort of thought to himself, you know, Kid Delicious, that actually, I like that. And
so, and the name stuck.
Name stuck, exactly.
And that's, does that, is that what he calls himself, and that's what everyone calls him? Or
yeah,
is he
funny.
Danny?
It goes back and forth, but he definitely, you know, when he told Delicious. I mean, he'll refer to himself just like a regular athlete. He'll refer to himself as third person as Kid Delicious.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, you talk about the sweeteners or the sweaters, right? These are the people that are watching. What's some of the other lingo of pool and pool hustling?
Oh, there are sweaters and the stake horses. I mean, a lot of these guys aren't betting their own money. They're betting a stake horse's money, which never made any sense to me, where I would put down $100 on you, and if you won, we'd split it. So I'm putting down $100 for you to make $50. But these sweaters are so confident in both their player and their pool expertise that they'll take that bet. It really does have a language all to it. I mean, it took me a while to figure out what was large and what was a grand, and oh, cabbage means money. I mean, it just big timber is big money. I think I included a glossary in the book.
You did,
just because I figured, you know, if I had to ask people twice about this, the average reader probably didn't know it either.
But I always think the colorful language just tells you so much about a subculture.
Oh, know? Yeah. And this subculture is, again, unfortunately, I think it's kind of diminishing. But, boy, you just, people don't realize that this stuff's still going on. But it's a lot there. Pretty rich subculture.
He went to Chicago Billiards, which you describe as a finishing school for hustlers.
Chicago Billiards was a pool hall in outside New Haven in Connecticut. Again, one of these places where I'm sure everybody that lived in that town never even knew it existed. And yet all the best hustlers came there, and the owner allowed the players to sleep there. And it was basically sort of boot camp for hustlers, and they would sleep when the sun was out and gamble through the night. And, you know, these pool players are also mad gamblers. It's not just the pool.
And they'll bet on anything, right?
Yeah, so these guys would play a $5,000 game and then bet double or nothing the next car out of the driveway would turn left, or, you know, the next gumball, or I bet you can't spit that saliva onto the windshield of the car below for $5,000. And the stories that came out of this place were just terrific. But a lot, I mean, it sort of served its purpose for Danny, too, where he played against the best players, learned sort of the cadence and the choreography of the hustle, and, you know, it sounds cliche, but when he got out of there, he was ready to go on the road.
Are there ethics in hustling? And there were certain things that Danny wouldn't do, but is there a kind of ethics,
honor among thieves?
Yeah, exactly.
There is. I was surprised by that. There really is. And, you know, at some level, these guys, yes, the whole foundation of what they do is about conniving. But there really is a code. And one of them is that when a guy is really, really low, you help him out. You give him what's called a gapper or a walking stick. So
meaning?
Yeah, exactly. There's more jargon for
right.
you. So he doesn't have to walk home.
Gotcha.
So you know, if you beat him, you give him a free game, basically. But though there really is, and you know, at some level, these guys are pretty ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath it all, there is some humanity there.
Let me get Mary from Williamstown, New Jersey, to join us. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. I love your show.
Thank you.
I started playing pool with my father in the bars when I was 10.
Wow.
And I'm 56 now. And I, even today, I just love going into a bar. I'm only about 5 foot tall. And I just love taking someone on that's about 6 foot six.
You go, Mary.
And you know, and they're wearing their motorcycle colors, and, you know, they just think they're going to, you know, kick my rear end. And I turn the tables on them, and everybody just, like, looks. And you just, you know, you stay very calm, and you don't exhibit the exhilaration that you feel. You know, you keep everything under control, and you can just learn so many lessons from that game.
Well, Mary, are you hustling, or are you just out there?
No.
Okay,
no.
You're just out there to prove
a point. I never got into
the
hustling, and I never played for money. But the hustle, to me, is a mental hustle rather right. than a monetary one.
But it sounds like you're also saying that you want, when Danny Bacevich talks about how pool kind of calms his head, helps him feel
yes.
that you can relate to that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because you don't want to show a weakness. You don't want to, and on the other hand, you don't want to show too much exhilaration.
And keep it up.
And pool is, it can be unpredictable at times. And you can make this what looks like a phenomenal shot, and it's sheer accident.
Interesting. Mary, hold on. Let me get to John Wertheim just to respond to your comments. Met people like Mary as you were writing the story about pool and pool hustlers?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, that it's a lot more than just the physical activity. And, I mean, I don't know if Mary could probably relate to this too, but these players sort of get in this zone where, you know, everything
yes.
on the periphery fades away, and they're just totally
yes.
locked into the table. And this, for Danny, he would have these issues. You know, he'd be sort of bedridden by mental illness, and he would get to that table, and just everything else would sort
would
of dissolve into the ether. Yeah, exactly. And he would just be locked
yes.
into this game.
Everything just fades away, and it's you and the table. And on those nights, it's you can't miss.
That's
you
fact.
Can't miss.
Well, Mary, look, I really appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Talking about pool and pool hustling today on Radio Times, and our guest is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, John Wertheim, and he's written a new book. It's called Running the Table, The Legend of Kid Delicious, The Last Great American Pool Hustler. And we hope to be talking to Kid Delicious in about 10 minutes or so. In the meantime, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Interested in hearing from some of the pool players in our audience besides Mary from Williamstown, New Jersey. John, is pool a sport where men and women can compete equally?
That's an interesting question. They can. I mean, I think for a variety of reasons, the best male players will beat the best female. Actually, I don't know if you know, the Black Widow, who's Jeanette Lee, who's probably the most prominent pool player. She's actually married to a male player who's not nearly as well known, but beats her. But no, I think that's one thing pool really has going for it, that it sort of, you know, there are plenty of women playing, and the women's tour actually, I think, does better than the men's tour in as much as it even exists. So definitely one of these sort of dual gendered sports.
So is pool dying? Is it a dying sport?
Pool's not dying. Hustling is dying.
Hustling is dying.
Which I think is something to be, you know, lamented.
Mourned?
Yeah, I do think it's something to be mourned. I mean, I think there's something very charming and very very American about it. But no, a lot of these guys are sort of being sucked in by poker. That you know, why drive halfway across the country and hang out at a bar hoping for action when you could sit in your living room in your flip-flops and get online and gamble.
But I would think it's harder and harder to be anonymous, too. I mean, you can be, you know, hustling someone down in Alabama. Someone can put you on their cell phone, pop it up on YouTube, and the world gets to see you, right?
That's exactly
and breaks
what's happening.
Is that what's happening?
Yeah. You know, 10 years ago, you could... You'd be in Owensboro, Kentucky, and you could get to either coast by the time they... No, you're absolutely right. By the time the sun comes up, there's a post on some forum or some website, look out for the heavyset kid with a New Jersey accent. The internet's really been the pool hustler's
right.
bane.
But I would think Danny Bacevich, Kid Delicious, just his reputation, though, would have preceded him at some of these places, only because of just how extraordinary he looked, how he sounded...
Eventually, that's what happened. But he did get clever for a while, and he would dye his hair, and he would grow facial hair, and he would say, "Oh no, I'm Martin, the sign salesman." Or he would also say, "Look at me, look at this belly. You think I'm a good pool player?" I mean, he was clever about it, and probably extended his hustling career. But you're right. Eventually, he couldn't fool too many people.
Let me get Walt from Jenkintown to join us. Hi, Walt. Go ahead. Your radio times.
Hi. I want to find out if your guest ever heard of table golf. Which is a game I played 70 years ago. My father was coming back from the Orient, where he'd been serving with the U.S. Navy fleet, and they had a pool table, but there were 17 little holes in it, and you shot a disc which looked like an ink eraser. There was a metal center and a rubber around the outside, and you shot it around the table to go for 18 holes. Table golf.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm looking at John Wertheim, Walt, just to see if I'm getting a glimmer of response here.
I'm interested, but it's not something I came across. I'm sure if there's money to be made on table golf, the hustlers have figured out a way to incorporate that, but I'd never come across that.
Oh, that's interesting. Walt,
The reason I'm interested in it is because at the age of 10, I won the ship's championship.
Well, it's time to bring it back,
course,
isn't it?
Of course, I wasn't hustling. It wasn't the name of the game, but because I played all day, every day, when they had the tournament, I won the ship's championship out of maybe 50 people.
Oh, that's great. Well, look, Walt, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Let me get Harry from Woodbury, New Jersey, to join us. Hi, Harry. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was raised in England, where the places are called billiard halls. And when you went in there, it was complete darkness. And all of a sudden, the light would come on where one of the tables would be lit up. They looked like zombies with sticks, with cues. But anyway, there were two games in England. One was called snooker. One was called billiards.
Billiards.
My father, I didn't know this. My father was called Spot, S-P-O-T. And they called me Young Spot. I didn't know why. But in billiards, there are two white balls and a red ball. One to differentiate the white balls, one has a black spot on it. But my father was expert at billiards. And apparently, when you play billiards, if you're good at that, any other game is easy. So when I came to England, to America, I thought, well, this pool's easy. Small table. But it's not as easy as you think. So anybody who's good at that, I really admire them.
Oh, that's great. And Harry, do you still play?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Great. Well,
I'm 74 now, but I really enjoy pool. It's a great game.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hearing from two people who were older Americans, does that tell you something about pool?
You know what else tells me? The stories just pour out of people. That is really, for whatever reason, a lot of memories that have nothing to do with hitting balls and holes get triggered at the pool hall. Mm-hmm. And sort of one of the things that made this book fun was that everybody had a memory. Everyone had it was almost this Pavlovian reaction where you mention X and it triggers these stories. I think it is an older sport, but it's making, there's sort of these new urban billiard halls. There's not where you're going to find great gambling,
right.
But there are these pool halls. It's Chelsea Billiards is now, you know, there's...
This is in
great,
New York.
Yeah, a great wine list and tuna tartare at the bar, and it's not what it used to be where guys were staying through the night to bet thousands of dollars and gamble and hustle, but it is sort of, I think, starting to appeal to a younger crowd.
And can you smoke at a pool hall?
Yeah, exactly. Not in New York.
Not in New York, yeah, exactly. Tell us a little bit more about this this pool player that Danny Bacevich hooked up with. This was a Bristol Bob Begay?
Yeah, Begay, I think.
Begay. Who was, talk about a kind of Mutt and Jeff team, but an intense guy, a perfectionist guy.
Right, you can. I mean, I don't know if you see even by the picture in the book, you can tell that this sort of everything Danny was not good and bad. I mean, the guy was this physical fitness freak, and he was this intense guy. He just dropped out of college, probably not Danny's equal as a player, but he looked the part of a pool hustler. And for whatever, I think they both had something the other wanted. I think this guy admired how Delicious made everyone in the room at ease, and he loved the guy's personality, and how come he makes all the friends. And I think Danny saw this handsome, physically fit guy and said, I wish I had some of his discipline. Right. And in this, you know, I mean, it's Hollywood is, but you know, in this pervert, in this sort of almost cliche way, they really hit it off, and they played off each other terrifically as a hustle team. That, you know, everyone thought Bristol Bob was a hustler, and the fat guy was just the guy backing him with money bags. And Bristol would win, and they'd say, oh, we want to play the fat guy now. He said, oh, no, he doesn't play. He's just the guy. He's just the money guy. Okay, well, you're going to have to give him an advantage. And then Kid Delicious, who was the superior player, would get up there and win. But, you know, a lot of players, a lot of hustlers have this road partner, both for economic reasons, but also, I think, sort of for moral support. And, you know, 10 years later, these two guys are in, they're still friends. So that was a nice component of the story.
There was a point where, though, Bristol Bob became a meth addict. I mean, he really took a tumble.
Yeah, it was a strange sort of role reversal almost, where you know, Danny actually had lost a significant amount of weight. There's a picture of him, and you know, he had this childhood where he was overweight, and then there's a picture of him where he probably weighs 175 pounds. Yeah. And Bristol, meanwhile, who was this physical fitness freak who would do push-ups in between his hustling, had some drug issues and had some crystal meth problems. And I mean, he's thankfully
over that.
He's over that. But it was this sort of interesting diverging paths where the heavyset guy got his act together and the guy who would do push-ups was living in a basement doing crystal meth for a spell.
Does that tell you, though, something about pool hustling? I mean, just, I guess, the difficulty of a life in a way?
It's brutal. Yeah, I think this transient life, I think it's not just, I think the highs and lows of the game, you're up $5,000, you're down, but also, you know, you're spending, it's sort of, I think, been romanticized at some level, and it's this continuation of frontier mentality and have stick. But, you know, when you're eating Thanksgiving dinner at Denny's in a strange town, it's, you know, probably not so romantic.
You write, among the many depressing aspects of being a road player, the chief one might be the difficulty most men have in forging meaningful relationships with women.
Yeah,
what happens on the road there?
Well, I mean, it's probably the guy in the rock band or on the sports team deals with it too, but there's just no stability. I think less than, at least you know there's going to be a concert that night. I mean, with pool, there's just zero stability in any sense. You don't know if you're going to sit on your hands or if you're going to be playing for $10,000. And moving around the country like that, and, you know, they had this, again, they had this 007, this sort of eye in the sky, so they'd be home and he would say, get in your car.
And go right now.
Some rich kid's uncle died and left him $1 million, and he's blowing it in Bessemer, Alabama. Go! So, yeah, not a lot of long-term romantic relationships among pool hustlers.
Well, and we're almost up at a break here, but I would think, if you're hustling pool players, you can end up hustling people you might be interested in as well. I mean, sort of when do you become who you really are? Or
yeah, exactly.
Take off the armor,
absolutely.
So to speak.
No, absolutely. That it you don't have these divisions that are necessarily so tidy. And the one thing about the drugs, I think they were sort of, Bristol felt hustled of all things. You know, how could I have let this guy into my head like this? That the drug dealer essentially hustled him, and that was a lot of his shame came from basically having a fast one pulled on him.
That a hustler got hustled.
Yeah, exactly.
John Wertheim is our guest today on Radio Times, and we're talking about the world of pool hustlers and hustling. And he's written a book. It's called Running the Table, The Legend of Kid Delicious, The Last Great American Pool Hustler. We are calling him up right now. That would be Kid Delicious, Donnie Basevich. And our guest is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, has covered a whole host of sports issues and sports players as well. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We want to hear from the pool players in our audience. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Germantown Friends School, authentic Quaker education for boys and girls K-12. Hosting an open house this Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. For details or to RSVP, www.germantownfriends.org.
Think about your day, the time you spend in your car, on the train, with your family. Time, it's important to you, and WHYY 91FM won't waste your time. Explore the issues behind the headlines with programs like Fresh Air, Radio Times, and The Next Mayor. 91FM delivers news from around the world and around the block. And coming soon, StoryCorps will be in Philadelphia. Your time is important, and so is your support. To support 91FM, visit WHYY.org. The time is now.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with actor Mark Ruffalo, the star of You Can Count on Me, Zodiac, and the new film Reservation Road. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Supporting WHYY Focus Features, presenting the new espionage film Lust, Caution, from Ang Lee, the Academy Award-winning director of Brokeback Mountain. Lust, Caution, now in select theaters.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. My guest sports writer John Wertheim immersed himself in the subculture of pool hustling and got to know a player named Danny Basevich, known as Kid Delicious. Basevich was a depressed, overweight New Jersey teenager, hated school, but discovered that he was a really, really good pool player. And before long, he hooked up with another player, Bristol Bob. They hustled at pool halls across the country, and that's what Wertheim writes about in his new book called Running the Table. And it's also about some of the characters who inhabit pool halls and the beauty of the game. And we've been talking with John Wertheim. And joining us now on the telephone is Danny Basevich, known as Kid Delicious. And Danny, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning to you, and it's a pleasure to be on.
Well, it's great to have you here. And what is it like to be the subject of this book, to be written about and talked about so much?
Oh, I mean, it's a dream come true for sure. And I thank John Wertheim for writing a great book. And it's awesome and unbelievable. I mean, there's so much good stuff going on.
Do you recognize yourself, Danny, in this book? Is this the Danny Basevich you know?
Yeah. People are going to learn a lot about me and myself, and about a lot of stuff that I've gone through to become a top pool player in the world, and also coping with depression and different in and outs of life.
Now, you spent a number of years hustling pool, and now I guess you play internationally and professionally. What's the difference between, hustling as a pool player and playing at some of these tournaments?
Well, I mean, the biggest difference is, in a tournament, when you play a match, or say like a tennis set, or something like that, is once you lose, that's it. You're out of the tournament. And the reason why gambling is the way to go, and because I'm able to, if I lose, I'm able to just bet more money and play again.
Right.
Because it's possible, even the best player in the world could lose a match at any time, and you could easily bet the money again, and by the end of the night, the better player will win every time.
Do you miss hustling?
I miss hustling a little bit. I mean, I used to get so much fun out of it, traveling all over, and going to, I've been to every single state in the United States from 17 to age 24, except for Hawaii and Alaska. I got to be everywhere in the United States. I've dealt with every type of person, and just all things I've learned and enjoyed. America is a beautiful place, and also other parts of the world. And it helped my depression, and it helped so many things with life. I miss it. I mean, I miss the hustle.
Well, John Wertheim writes about your depression. You're very candid about the fact that you've had to struggle with depression through a lot of your life, and that pool really helped you deal with that, really brought you out of that depression. Is it something you still have to deal with today?
Yeah. To be honest with you, today I take Paxil for depression, but I'm a lot better off right now in my life than I was. Tell you, when I was 15 years old, struggling with depression, when I really didn't have pool. Like when I first started playing pool, I was really struggling with depression and with my weight and just not handling life well at all. And I almost didn't even want to live. But when I was about 12 years old, when that pool room opened up right down my block in Manalapan, New Jersey. It was a bicycle ride, and I hit a few balls for my first time. I was so happy and smiling from ear to ear, and I knew it was going to be something I was going to be doing for a long time.
And do you understand why pool made you feel that way?
Well, I have a very hard time, and a lot of other people in life, I've learned, have a hard time getting in the zone and being in the moment. And I was having a real hard time with that. I was always dwelling on being heavy and dwelling on, say, somebody saying I'm the fat kid in class. And playing pool, you know, I don't think about nothing. Like, and that's why I'm one of the best players in the world, is I could be playing on an ESPN match with cameras in front of me and the crowd going crazy, and I don't even see them at all. You couldn't even tell me what's going on if somebody ran right by me.
So the zone is a really comfortable place to be, right?
It really is. And it's helped me a lot with other stuff in life, too, to get in the zone. And I hope a lot of people are able to get in the zone with whatever they could do in life.
Well, let me turn to John Wertheim. You've seen Kid Delicious play.
It's mesmerizing.
I was going to say, can you describe that on the radio?
It's it's not what you think cinematically. He's not hitting shots behind his back that crack in the pockets, but the way he can work a table and sort of go through these rotations is just we're sort of having this Zen discussion about being in the moment, but it's really this mesmerizing experience. You know, I saw him in tournament play too, and unfortunately, he made a lot more money hustling. He'd have these stories about $10,000. Games, and suddenly I see him in a tournament. It was, you know, he'd come in second out of 128 guys and win $800. But in tournament play, where he's, as he said, you know, a couple mistakes and you're out.
Right.
The way he sort of sets up his game and is thinking, it was like a chess player. You know, he's thinking 5, 6, 7, 8 moves ahead and rotates this cue ball almost as if it's on a string. It's almost like remote control where the ball not only knocks the ball he wants into the pocket, but then sets up behind the next one. It's really a wild experience.
And Danny, do you dream about pool shots?
I'll tell you, I used to dream about pool shots every second of the day.
Did you?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. Right now, I have a lot of stuff on my mind, and I'm not dreaming as much as I used to. But I used to dream about pool all the time. And right now in my life, if you could put a penny on the pool table wherever you want, and I can make any shot and make the white ball go as many rails and end up right on the penny on every single shot.
I'd like to see that. That's fantastic. You know, there's a story in this book, and I want to have both you and John talk about it, and it took place in Philadelphia. I guess you were hustling the Philly mob. Was that true, Danny Bacevich?
Absolutely, it's true. And there's a lot of other great stories in there, too, but this is a great story.
Yes,
I'd
it
like
is.
To tell a little
Please
bit
do.
About.
Please do. And you were in Boulevard,
on Roosevelt Boulevard.
Go ahead.
It's Social Club.
Boulevard Billiards that John was saying. It's on the second floor off the boulevard. It's only about like 5 minutes from like the Tacony Bridge over there in Philly. And I was on one of my road trips traveling on my way south to the Carolinas. And it was like my first stop. We drove, me and Bristol Bob drove like a little over an hour on the road, and we walked in there really just to take a little pit stop and have a soda and a Philly cheesesteak. And sure enough, I was in there, and it was a very crowded night, and there was a bunch of the high Philly mob guys in there with big-time money. And one guy had a brown bag full of money, and he showed it to me, and my eyes lit up, and I sure wanted to get some of that dough.
And you hustled, you got about $20,000, isn't that right?
Yeah, I won between like $20,000 and $30,000, beating four of the best players in the whole Philadelphia in a row. And I was a little scared that, like, because normally I was getting tired, you know, after playing match after match. And in pool, the number one thing is if you're winning, you're not allowed to quit or stop playing.
Oh,
you have to. You have the loser has to stop. So because I was up money on this mobster, I was getting scared because I when I got up like $10,000 and I beat like the first two guys, I really wanted to go home. I was very happy being up $10,000, and I believe me, it was one of the highest totals of money I've ever seen or won before. And I believe me, I wanted to get home. And the guy kind of said it in a nice way that I got to stay, or something might happen, and I got to play some more guys that he's got
Yikes.
To play.
Yikes.
And sure enough, he brings in the second best player in Philadelphia at the time was this guy named Eddie Abraham, was the third guy. And I ended up giving him a small handicap, but I ended up beating him out of about like $8,000. And then finally I'm thinking that I'm done, and the mobsters are all going crazy. And, you know, they're like cursing me out, but in a nice way. It's kind of weird. Like, people always say, how come I never got in a fist fight, or how come these guys never hurt you? And luckily, pray to God, and me being a nice guy, these guys, they really seem to like me a lot. And I'm thinking I'm done, and here comes walking in the pool room Mike LeBron, U.S. Open champion, one of the greatest players in the world to this day.
They pulled out all their big guns on you. I think, John, you want to add something to this story?
Well, we were talking about backing, first of all. And on the one hand, it's nice to play pool when someone else is bankrolling you and you're basically getting half the winnings without putting your own money down. But one of the drawbacks is you're at someone else's mercy. So this backer says, look, I'm down $10,000. You got to get down here and beat this kid. Not a lot of room to negotiate. So the backer who's losing all the money was just sort of calling his various players, and they all, 2 a.m, these guys are asleep, and suddenly they've got to play pool for big stakes. But also you saw another example of the ethics we were talking about before, that you don't quit winner, it's called.
Right.
And, you know, in a way there's something very noble about that.
And there were guys with guns in that room, right, Danny?
Absolutely. There were plenty of guys with guns, and some of them you could see their gun, you know, right in there. Pocket or in their belt, and I was very nervous playing, and I was very happy to get out of there alive, for sure.
Well, and about $20,000, is that right?
Yeah, a little bit more than that, and they were making bets on the side, too, with a certain, they might have been 50 guys watching the match, and about 10 of them started to bet on me. Like, first they were betting against me, and then they grew a liking to me, and they started betting with the mobsters themselves. Like, other mobsters started betting on me, and I started to get a little bit more comfortable. So I might have won $25,000, and all the other mobsters might have won another $25,000 off of the big mobster that was backing the pool player.
Wow, John, you want to add something?
Yeah, I'm going to blank on the name, but the Philly mob reporter at the Inquirer, George
Anastasia.
Exactly. I called him with some of these names and said, "Are any of these ring familiar from this story?" Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep. I think he's in jail. I think so. Did they call him Catbert? This was the one section in the book where I actually used pseudonyms, but George Anastasia was my confirmation that these characters were indeed mobs.
And George knows the mob here in the Philadelphia area. Danny, we got a caller that wants to get in on the conversation, and this is Chris from New Hope. Chris, go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Oh, good. How you doing? Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Danny, your story sounds like something out of Sopranos, and you walked away from the scene, so you should be in many episodes. And I was hoping all along that story that, you know, that they were either arrested or maybe passed away by now.
Or in
come
jail.
Back after, you know, I'm only kidding. That's the way the life works, isn't it? It's strange.
Are you a pool hustler, Chris?
I used to be when I was about his age with my grandfather's pool table with just kids.
And used to hustle the, what, people in the neighborhood?
Yeah.
And did you have a question about...
Over. Oh, my grandfather had this big old German pool table. I don't know how he got it. He must have imported it. It was huge. It was the full-size deal. And, you know, my question sounds superficial at this point.
Ahead.
But when you pull out a bridge, I mean, if you do, probably don't. Everyone goes, oh, he's pulling out the bridge. But not a hustler, I pull shark, more or less. That's what we called ourselves back in the day. I'm 50 years old, so we went to shark, pool shark. If you pull out a bridge, that'd be a no-no.
Danny?
No.
Danny,
no,
go ahead.
Not at all, Chris. There's a lot of guys who say they're too cocky, or they say they're too good for the bridge, because usually if you got to take a bridge out, you can't reach the ball. And you know, a lot of guys will try to shoot opposite-handed or one-handed, or they stretch and miss the shot. Don't ever be scared about pulling out the bridge. I hate it when I hear guys, you know, will call you like a girl or some other bad words I can't say on the air when you pull out the bridge. And the bridge is a great thing to get used to using, and you're going to play a lot better and make a lot more shots, especially when you have, say, bad position or, you know, you just out of line.
And thanks for the call, Chris. To you, Danny, and we got a caller that actually saw you play in Atlantic City, but to you, Danny, was your weight ever a problem when playing pool?
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, even though I'm a 300-pound pool player, I like to believe that I'm an athlete, even though I'm a heavy-set guy. And once in a while, it's a problem. I'm not going to lie. My feet get sore when I play. And there is some shots where it's a joke, but when I'm stretching over a shot, they'll say I'm belly hooked to where my belly will get a little bit in the way when I have to lean over on the table. Kind of on a long shot, like Chris said, that just got off the air, sometimes I can't stretch as many balls as, say, you know, a skinnier guy,
sure.
And I might have to use a bridge a few more times.
Let me get to Bill from Tabernacle to join us this morning on Radio Times. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Hey, I wanted to just relate a couple of quick Danny things. I saw you play down in Atlantic City. It was very entertaining. And you really set yourself apart from the guys on, like, the pro tour. You had a very informal kind of attitude, and you said a couple of really funny things. In the professional thing, there's a 30-second shot clock, and the referee warns you when you have 10 seconds left. And Danny has this weird kind of neck thing where he's constantly trying to get, like, a kink out of his neck, and the referee at 10 seconds goes, 10, like, to warn you. And Kid Delicious looks over to the referee, stands up from his shot, and says, 10? I didn't even get my neck loosened up yet. And anybody who watches a professional tournament would like that. Also, there was a power failure during the tournament, and they were playing nine ball. When you play nine ball, if you make a shot and then the nine ball goes in, you win. So right after the shot, the lights went out. The ESPN cameras went down. Everything went down. And about 30 seconds later, the lights came on, and Danny stands up and goes, "Oh, look, the nine went in." And the whole place went into an uproar. It was hilarious, Danny, and it really made it entertaining for me. So thanks.
Oh, Bill.
Absolutely. I appreciate the call and the positive feedback. That's great.
And Bill, thanks for thanks for the call to Radio
Thank you
Time.
Very much.
And you know what, fellas, we are out of time. And Danny, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
And good luck.
Hopefully, I could come on again in the future when the movie comes out next year about my life story with Lionsgate.
It would make a great movie, let me tell you. Danny, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
And John, thank you very much as well.
My pleasure, thanks.
And our guest has been John Wertheim. He's written a book about Danny Bacevich, and the book is called Running the Table, The Legend of Kid Delicious, The Last Great American Pool Hustler, and maybe a movie, maybe not a movie, time will tell. Appreciate your phone calls to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and leave us an email. Find out more about the program, including podcasts. Devorah Lissick, Alan Tu, and Susan Greenbaum produce Radio Times. Scotty Williams, the engineer for today's edition of the show. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.